Hi everyone, this is John.
This is Wire.
This is Greg.
And this is the Nintendo Show, episode 93 of the Best Damn Nintendo Podcast on the internet. And this is the official show for the month of June 2018.
Right, 93?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
You are stunned every month. Every month you are.
What you should do is
to fuck
with it for the next couple months. Go down in watch him be like, oh my fucking god.
3 years from now, we've only done 20 of these things?
I mean, we should come up with something clever for 100. I feel like we've also had this conversation.
Yeah, probably. I don't know.
All it means is I drink two more beers than I'm supposed to. It's kind of what happens when we have an anniversary.
I guess, because I listen to a lot of podcasts, and a lot of them will do, like, yeah, it's the 100th episode, or it's the 500th episode.
Don't you love that we have a base 10 new metric?
Yeah.
That it wouldn't matter if it was a base 8.
It turns into, like, a lot of, like, navel-gazily bullshit a lot of times, and, like, great, congratulations, the three of us has gotten into a room and bullshit for an hour and a half, like.
Okay, well, why don't we do our 100th episode, and you and I get smashed?
Yeah, okay.
Again, this is, I think, we get absolutely drunk.
I'm pretty sure that's what we're going to do for, like, 80 as well.
Yeah. Oh, we keep saying that. But our 100th brand gets smashed.
I'll be stone sober. I'll be the one that runs the show.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Well, you're, like, an alcoholic professional, so we probably wouldn't be able to, like, tell the difference anyways.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. I was listening to one of our old episodes. I don't know why. I was listening to one of our old episodes, and I was clearly been drinking. Like, we were ranking Pokemon or something, and I was just like, oh, man, I've got a drug right here. I'm really into this. I am a little bit tipsy. I shouldn't care this much about ghost types. But lo and behold.
So, what we usually do on the official show is we talk about some news, as well as new releases, and preview the next month's games. However, E3 was the big thing. We already did an E3 show, so we're not going to do another recap of that. There was one piece of news I wanted to touch on. The Switch is getting a price drop in Canada.
Okay. Those sons of bitches.
It is going from $399 Canadian to $379 Canadian.
Could you believe it?
It's getting a $20 Canadian price drop. So that's like $8 real money. So, great.
Real money.
Yeah.
You heard me.
Okay.
Come at me, Canada.
Yeah. I'm caging comments about tariffs. We don't need to talk about
this. Yeah, we don't. On a serious note, I do love Canada, though.
Yeah.
So... new releases. We got a bunch of new games that came out. There are two games that I guess technically came out in May. I'm going to talk about them anyway because we didn't talk about them in the mini show. I've been playing Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze, which came out on the Switch beginning of May. I'm playing it on Wii U because I'm not going to rebuy it. I'm not going to double
it. Just for Funky Kong.
Right. Well, that, and you know, it's kind of like the Mario Kart 8 approach. Like, I really like Mario Kart 8, but my Wii U is still hooked up, so why? Why would I drop another $60 on a game I already own?
Well, I mean, if you haven't bought like the DLC or anything for Mario Kart.
Yeah, true. I mean, that might be worth it just to get the complete package.
And you can take it on the go with you.
Yeah, you know that Mario Kart on the go isn't necessary for me. Like, I you're doing a great job with the sales pitch. Nintendo should hire you absolutely. But just right now,
they'll hire white people.
But no, I mean, it's not the right time. Like, maybe at one point, if the Wii gets unhooked, it might be the right time to get Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, but Tropical Freeze will, you know, it's probably not one that I'll ever rebuy. But I really like it. It's a really great platformer. We played a little bit in co-op. It is weirdly harder in co-op mode, even though you hardly ever have to, like, start a level over or use a checkpoint.
Well, it's harder because you don't have that second character that you can just naturally control and use.
You
don't instantly have Cranky right there for your pogo jump, or you don't have...
It's also more chaotic.
Yeah.
Because the levels will zoom further out, and they're destructible things in the levels, especially once you get to toward the later stages in the game where, like, the levels are just kind of moving themselves forward without being auto-scrollers. Just the way that the levels break apart, or... there are conveyor belts and things that move you along where it's really tough to stay together. And when you start worrying about slowing down for the other person or speeding up to try to catch the other person, you wind up getting into some trouble.
So, okay. Did your version come with a mug?
It did not come with a mug, no.
This looks like a pretty cool mug.
I might have to rebuy it. I would buy it for a mug.
Mm-hmm. It's a Donkey Kong looking like a real boss.
Hmm. Is that yellow. Oh, wait, is that a mug... for Tropical Freeze or for Mario plus Rabbids?
Now that I think about it. I mean, it's in a picture with the Switch Tropical Freeze.
Okay, so yeah.
Yeah, you know, people can do all kinds of crazy stuff with editing images. Hmm. I'm pretty sure they could put the wrong game by a mug. Still,
Do you think, is that like, is that merchandise, or is that like somebody's custom mug that they made, you think? We're going to get 3 minutes out of this mug.
This looks professional, right? I mean, I'm going to swing this around so you can actually get a set of eyeballs on it. It's a handsome mug.
Yeah.
You would be proud to have this in your collection of mugs.
Yeah. So, or next to my Shuckle mug.
Yes. Hey, you don't fuck it with Shuckle.
You sure don't.
So that's going to come with, what was the other Donkey Kong game?
I had a Kool-Aid mug. A Kool-Aid mug. And then I dropped down your Terrazzo floor and shattered.
Good.
The day I brought it back, brought it home.
Good.
I like how you established what kind of floor it was too. That was that was vivid storytelling.
Oh yeah. It was a Wednesday. It was a crisp 83 degrees outside.
Yeah.
Now you sound like one of my mom's voicemails.
You sound like a Floridian at 83 degrees.
A temperate 83.
Yes.
I don't know. Florida's getting a little ridiculous. Like I may have to leave. Like I'm this heat is nonsense.
I'm actually so happy that it's happening now.
Really?
I've been wanting these, like, oppressive, disgusting hot days.
Like, I feel like Florida's melting.
Wait,
like,
why?
This is because you're in Florida. This is Florida, man. I'm one of the few people that actually just kind of loves the heat. I would take this over 40 degrees, you know? Or I would take it over 60, even. I'd rather it be super hot than even, like, mildly cool. Just me, though.
No, that's
I don't like being cold, but, like, this is nonsense.
I would much rather be cold. Like, if our summers were, like, 70 degrees and, like, the rest of the year were, like, 30, great.
Don't you like it when you just immediately just, every inch of you is just produces sweat? And then your heart rate doubles even though you're standing still.
it's exactly like being on crack. Yeah, like it's amazing.
Desperately trying to cool down. And your body is telling you that something terrible is happening to you. And it's like you're just in Florida.
It's like you're drowning inside and out.
Yeah.
One of the other Donkey Kong game that you're talking about is the Mario plus Rabbids DLC. We'll get to that in a minute. But
is that free DLC or you gotta buy it?
It's $15.
I'm not buying that.
You don't even have the main game.
Yeah, I do.
What? When did that happen?
Mario and Rabbids?
When did you buy that?
I bought that a long time ago.
Have you played any of it?
Yeah.
Huh.
Mario
How is that
and Rabbids?
Not...
How we've had this discussion.
How has that not come up on a mini show?
We've discussed it on a mini show.
I don't think we have.
We have.
I don't think that's ever happened once.
Mario and Rabbids?
Yeah.
Fuck, John.
we're going to dive deeper into this. How many times have you bought Skyrim?
Twice.
And you won't spring $15 for some DLC?
Now I have a game that I barely play.
So how much have we discussed if you've barely played it?
I got Mario Rabbid, and I beat the big Monkey Rabbid.
Hmm. The Donkey Kong one?
Yeah.
You changed it to mono sound.
Tailored the options.
Yes. Long time ago. I played it before Xenoblade.
Got to the debug menu.
Remember, I bought it with Xenoblade because we had a sale in my store.
Okay.
It was buy Mario Rabbids, get another game half off.
I believe you.
God, I hate you so much.
So wait, this is Donkey Kong with the shades and the bandana.
And the white beard?
Yes.
Man, he's looking pretty sweet.
Funky Kong is
you
pretty
guys know, you guys are Duffman?
He looks like Red Trash.
Red Trash?
What the fuck? He looks like a redneck.
I was gonna say
was really racist.
I was gonna say he actually looks like that 90s take on Hispanic gangsters.
Oh,
you know?
Sure.
Like the Emilio Estevez, like wife beater,
redneck and white trash.
Yeah.
Man.
So yeah, you guys know Duffman from The Simpsons?
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like Funky Kong is kind of the Duffman of Donkey Kong.
Where he does kind of like have that like...
Donkey Kong is ridiculous.
Yeah.
But he's more ridiculous.
Yes. Yes. And
he's overly macho.
Funky Kong.
And partying constantly.
Funky Kong is that exact character. He owns and operates the store. Like the one store you get to. Also, Funky Flights is his shtick too, but you don't need to take a plane anymore in Donkey Kong games. So, Funky Kong, and he very much
only
has like
one
the,
even trying to engage in actual business.
Yeah, like, but see, but he's also like the typical like Southern Californian surfer, where he's just like throwing up vaguely gang symbols with his hands.
Kind of looks like the party slurm.
That was Slurms McKenzie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just going around with me where
possible.
But yeah, I mean, like, I can see the appeal of one to play as Funky Kong, because, you know, Tropical Freeze isn't an easy game. It's weirdly easier in single player, but...
There's a lot of games that are like that, though.
I mean, I died a lot when we were playing.
That's fine.
A lot.
It's not like they're stingy with lives. The game gives you a ton of lives, which makes you wonder, like, what the point of them is. Like, I can die 5 times in a level, and by the time I finish a successful run, I have all 5 of those lives back.
What happens if you run out of lives?
I have no idea. I've never seen it happen. As difficult as that game can be, I've never run out of lives.
I mean, does it just ruin your save file?
It like deletes your entire save. No, that would be mean. I mean,
insane.
They really haven't changed their philosophy when they use lives, which is sparingly now, which is a good thing. They really haven't changed their philosophy and how that works since Super Mario 64, which is it saves after every level. After you collect a star, and every time you game over, it just loads your save. So they made lives obsolete for these platforming games in Mario 64, but...
Maybe it's just for the stakes. You know, just to make you feel like there's something...
So you don't get kicked out to a root menu? Like, those are the stakes.
Or just to make it feel like you're just brute-forcing a game. Like, you're dying a bunch, and it's just, like, not... Like,
I think
you're like, shouldn't the game challenge me in some capacity?
I think part of it, the big part of it, that why they still use it now, sometimes, is that it gives you something to grab in a level. Like you see a 1-up balloon floating by, like, oh, I want to go grab that, and you rush for it, even though they mean nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And to collect all the Kong letters, other than like having the satisfaction of knowing you got them all there, it gives you a life.
Yeah.
So it's small incentives here and there, which still hold a little bit of value, even though their usefulness is minimal.
Yeah. Well, now it's all like it's like the mobile game approach, where it's like they create currencies within the items themselves. So it's like, oh, you can only do this fight so many times unless you spend this, and then you click a few screens and realize, oh, in order to simply do this, I need to give you money. Like,
sure.
I'd rather not just give you money to play a game.
So for example,
let's not do it that way.
In the original Donkey Kong games, you would want to grab bananas because, you know, lives in the Super Nintendo Donkey Kong games, you know, were... They weren't in short supply, but, like, the gulf in between, like, how much lives they just pump at you in the Tropical Freeze and Donkey Kong Returns games, it's massive compared to how many they would give you in the Super Nintendo game, the 16-bit Donkey Kong Country games. So,
those were so problematic.
Right. Well, but what you want to do is every time you would see bananas is you want to go after those bananas. Because 100 of those give you life. It does so in the modern country games as well. However, what they also do is they open up the shop. Funky Kong's got his store. He no longer just provides airline assistance. He is actually selling you items you can use in a level. You can pump up your HP with an extra heart. You can do things like if you're riding in a vehicle, like a barrel or a minecart, you can give that piece of equipment some extra defense. You can buy things like character barrels, DK barrels, so you can bring in a secondary character immediately at the start of a level. You can hire a parrot, and the parrot will give you an indication if there's a puzzle piece hidden, like a little collectible hidden in the level. So,
okay.
Yeah, so you get a little bit of assistance there. Anyway, there's a number of things you can do, and I was making this point because it shows you that you can do more with a banana rather than just collect them for lives, but that's not the case. My premise was mistaken. You don't use the banana for the shop. You use an extra little collectible that you find in loves, just little coins, and that's your currency. So you have bananas as a life currency and coins as a shop currency.
Hmm.
I've undermined my own point.
You have.
Shit.
You certainly have. But hey, you know, I think it's better that there's that than the kind of problems from the SNES DK series, which would be like the later levels churning through lives versus how much you stack them earlier.
and how lives don't carry over with your saves.
It's true. Yeah.
You know, which is really annoying. Or finding yourself trapped, like literally trapped in maps where it's like, maybe I didn't want to play an entire fucking world. Like, I just wanted to play a couple of fights, or I wanted to do a couple maps. And then it's like, well, you know, if you stop here, you're not at a save point.
Right.
You either got to find a flight backwards or stumble across the thing to save. And you're like, the next save location is four more maps down the road.
With that,
I don't want to do that.
That happened to us. That happened to us in Donkey Kong Country 2. We were playing through that, and it was the wasp boss, the bumblebee thing. And
we
load up a save, gives us five lives. We had to play a level, then the boss fight, then two more levels in the next world before we get to a save point.
Yeah, that's just bad.
And it was brutal. It took us like an hour of dying and reloading to actually get through that. So,
and again, yeah, because they're not keeping track of us through the first like three worlds where we're crushing it and we've got like 30 lives or something. You know?
Yeah, it's you load a save, yeah.
And you basically they're just putting you in a spot and saying you got five lives, which sucks.
Mm-hmm. So.
But that, I mean, I would rather be trivial than obnoxiously
it's true.
Difficult.
Yeah, you always choose feast when your choice is feast or famine.
Yeah.
So, Tropical Freeze, I recommend it. If you don't have it on Wii U, definitely get it on Switch. It's definitely a game worth playing. The other game that I played that came out toward the end of May is Bloodstained Curse of the Moon. And this is a sort of like taste test for a game we've talked about in the past, a Bloodstained Ritual of the Night, which is a Castlevania-esque game.
Is there
game.
Anything in this world that is not stained in blood?
No, everything is stained in blood.
My God.
So, like, it's a Castlevania game. One of the major creative forces behind modern Castlevania games quit Konami, as he should. No one should work at Konami ever again. They don't make video games anymore. So, he went off and formed his own indie studio, and he's making these Castlevania-inspired games. And this is I think this was a Kickstarter like stretch goal, like a bonus for Kickstarter supporters, that they would make this 8-bit, or you know, 16-bit. Kind of, I would say it's probably a 16-bit looking, maybe a little bit in between. Anyway, neither here nor there. But
it looks like it's a lot of characters. Well, I mean, I looked up Ritual of the Night, and I'm seeing a lot of characters that look like stuff you were fighting.
Yes.
So it's like de-resed version of it or something.
Right. So it's
is that what you were saying just a second ago? I really was.
I think it's supposed to be like a prequel. It's supposed to like be like some backstory to what's happening. I don't know. I wasn't paying attention. Like that's some scrolling.
Yeah,
I didn't care. But it's more of a classic Castlevania game, as in like the 8 and 16 bit Castlevanias, where you don't have like a Symphony of the Night style level, where it's much more like a Metroid. Whereas classic 8 and 16 bit Castlevanias were just more straight up action games where you'd go level by level, maybe find some power ups or some health pickups, but it was much more about getting to the boss and beating the boss and then moving on from there. You don't do any backtracking.
Mm-hmm.
However, Curse of the Moon does have some things that do encourage some replay. There are playable characters that you recruit, and you can swap between the characters on the fly. They each have different skills. One jumps higher and slides. Another one can change to a bat and fly around.
Mm-hmm.
There's some traversal things that make it worth replaying levels as these different characters.
It actually, it seems like you've got a pretty good handle on it from just watching you play it.
Yeah, that was my second playthrough. I did play it through to the end, and there are a couple different ways you can play. You can actually go through and find these playable characters. You can recruit them after boss fights, or you can just murder them. And by murdering them, you power up your original character that you start as. You don't ever get a choice. You always start as the orange dude. And if you recruit the character, you don't get the extra technique as your original guy. Or if you choose to kill them, you get a extra technique.
Is mostly like just for platforming and everything. It's not like...
Right, but it doesn't seem like he ever becomes as useful himself as the other playable characters would be in combination. Like there's areas that even with your extra techniques as the main character, you won't be able to access areas without the secondary characters.
I mean, why would you play as the main character though if you're not powering him up at all? Because pretty much he's just as a basic jump and a sword slide. What?
He has a bit more HP than the other characters. He's a bit sturdier. Also, the other characters. Like, there's an old man, a mage character, who has practically zero HP, and his melee attack is garbage. He does have a secondary weapon, and much like a Castlevania game, your secondary weapons have to be switched out. You can never have a collection of secondary weapons. It's you either have the holy water or you have the whip. You can't have them both. But there is the old man character can have a shield, which is a pretty cool secondary weapon, because much like it would imply, if you just like ram into an enemy, it will kill them. He can also have like a doppelganger, where he has like a green ethereal image of himself out in front of him. That seems pretty much useless. But the major the major use for this old man mage character is that he can have like a Earthbound-esque PK Thunder magic spell, where he summons lightning bolts or like orbs of light that track enemies, and it's really useful against bosses. And the final boss, I think it's heavily implied that that's the technique you should be using, because I'm not sure how you're supposed to damage him otherwise. But anyway, maybe if I finish off this run where I'm going solo, I'll figure that final boss out. But it's strange though, because there are definitely areas in early levels in the game where it wants it has places that you can only access with a character that you get after that level. But I can't seem to figure out what I'm supposed to do to start the game over with all the extra characters in tow. So I play through level one with these extra side characters. I don't know.
Quick side note?
Yeah.
So Summer Games Done Quick is going on, right?
Yeah.
One of the interesting, kind of what you're talking about a little bit that sort of relates, is someone did this really clever speed run where it was Super Mario World, all ghost houses and dungeons and bosses, of course, but no items.
Hmm.
So you have to beat like the entire Star Road, everything.
I did see this.
Without an item.
And
some
see
of them
this.
Are really, really clever, really impressive, where it's like, you know, you gotta like save a shell from the beginning of the map to get to the end of the map. Like, think about that one where, you know, you normally, it's a false ending, and then you have to fly underneath it,
oh,
and then
yeah.
you get to the other side. What would you do if you didn't have a cape? How would you get through that?
Right.
You would chain
yep.
shells and jump.
I saw this. He died a bunch of times. I actually saw this part, too. It was really cool.
Yeah.
He would grab two shells and pretty much move on. He'll grab one shell from the beginning, midway through, pick up a second shell, throw one shell over the false ending, and then he'll jump over that. He would go to the edge, throw one shell up, grab the other one, jump off that shell, and then use that momentum to throw the other shell and jump off that one in order to land on the other. It took him a few tries. It was awesome, though.
Yeah. It was really impressive. And a lot of that was, I think, probably the most complicated one I saw of all of the weird things he had to do.
Definitely.
But a lot of it was just, like, clever planning and stuff like that. But yeah, neat. And also kind of just a thing to prove that you can do, like that every map can be beaten without an item.
And there was another part, like, and other little things like checkpoints. He couldn't even use checkpoints because it made him big. So there's a couple of checkpoints. It's like, all right, this is a little tricky because I can easily accidentally get this. So like people were cheering because he dodged checkpoints.
Nice.
Just
oh, and like that one, like you that you know to get to the part where you're chaining the shells over the false ending, right? Like you have to go past that halfway point every single time, and it's just gotta like stare you in the face and be like, fuck, I wish I'd have to do this from the very beginning. But
all you end up with, the checkpoints are placed in areas where you just incidentally cross them, because that's the game being nice. So if you're intentionally not trying to get a checkpoint, you gotta really keep
it's
in mind where it is.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So that was the tangent. That's it.
Okay. I don't have anything else to say about Bloodstained.
You're a cute woman in this thing with horns. That's
I am.
Cool.
Yeah. Is that the purple character?
She's wearing like a lot of blue and a lot of skin.
Okay.
I
think she might be the main character in the full game.
Appears like a tattoo of a rose.
Okay.
But yeah, she got little goat horns. It's kind
of
cool.
Because I think like the character you play as in Curse of the Moon, the main character, the orange guy, I think he's actually the antagonist in the full game that should be coming out this year. We'll see. But Curse of the Moon, this little taste test for Ritual of the Night, is available on the Switch eShop. It's $10. It's all right. I had a good time, and I might finish a second run of it.
Cool.
So, a couple other new releases that I want to talk to. These ones actually came out in June. Wes, we were playing Hollow Knight.
We were playing Hollow Knight.
You downloaded it on your Switch?
I did.
What do you think?
I really like it.
Yeah?
I think it's a lot of fun.
We started up a new file the other day.
You're definitely better at those kind of games than I am.
It's an interesting game. Yeah. And after playing it on your Switch, like, we should keep going. Like, we should keep on going off of that save file. But I'm not sure if I'm going to download it on mine. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a cool game to have. And, it, you know, it looked good next to my the library of my other eShop games. But I don't want to start over.
Yeah.
Because it is...
I mean, very... I'm probably going to start over and have my own file. And just save our file for when I bring it over to you.
Okay.
Because it is... Now that I played it with you, I have a better grasp of the game. Because those kind of games always confuse the crap out of me. It's more like the layout and everything is like Metroid. Where
sure.
Going a lot back and forth and it throws me off.
I got a better grasp of it now. The level layouts and what it's showing you early on is heavily implying that this is like a Metroid and that you're going to be powering up your character in order to access different areas. Mm-hmm. But so far, and we must have played for an hour and a half, 2 hours.
Yeah, we played for a little while, yeah.
And all we got, we was a projectile attack. We haven't actually done any power-ups to the character. Oh, that's right, we did get a dash. Yeah, and that's where we stopped.
And that boss was cool.
Yeah, that was a cool fight. But I think that so some of the appeal for some people for this game is that it doesn't really broadcast where you're supposed to go next.
No.
So, and for me, I prefer something like a Metroid game where you have this maze, and really when you
I found a very cool visual map of the game.
Oh, oh nice. Wow, that's really cool. Like, I want that on my wall. That's really fucking cool.
Oh, well, so at my job, I have dual monitors, so the dream dimensions for me is 3840 by 1080. It means that you have double wide monitors set up, and this is easily big. It's not wide enough, but it is so big that I could crop this middle panel and have this whole thing with just unbelievable detail. This is horrible for radio, but but like it shows you the map, like you're saying. If you don't give you good direction, if you had this printed on your wall as you're playing the game, then you can very easily navigate and see, like, oh, I need to go to the fucking Queen's Gardens or whatever, or I need to go to the nail guy over here or whatever.
Yeah.
It's just, like, this just giant map. This thing looks fucking amazing.
Yeah, it is a really nice rendition.
Oh, and the color palette tells you that there's lots of uniquely animated little areas.
Yeah.
Like, it looks pretty cool.
But it doesn't, when we beat the first boss.
We did.
And we got the projectile power-up. And from there, we just kind of wandered around and found our way to this forest. And like, it seems like that's the next place we're supposed to go, because there's a boss fight there and a character. And the boss character that you encounter at the end, you also see kind of moving around throughout the levels. You're trying to follow her. But I don't know, maybe there was an area we were supposed to go to first. I don't know. It's hard to tell.
It is, but I think we're going the right way, because going in the opposite direction, we get to a ledge or something that we can't reach and stuff. Like, it seems like we need that dash power up in order to progress in the other areas.
But so, we also ended up in the Fog Canyon by mistake.
You're right,
and then left immediately. Because, like, well, we should probably finish looking at the woods, right? I don't know. Maybe. Maybe we would have found something in Fog Canyon that would have made the woods a lot easier.
It's kind of like a Dark Soul-ish, where they're like, here's all these different paths. You pick which way you want to go and figure it out. Like, it doesn't hold your hand.
Well, I've heard competing thoughts on that in games like that, where it's sort of explore and discover, and it's sort of like the path of least resistance is usually the best way to go. It's like, don't try to 100% one small part of the map. Just go with the flow and go where you think the game wants you to go, and then when you hit a wall, you maybe need to backtrack and do it then. Otherwise, just collect what you need to. If you're trying to be like the completionist and doing all that stuff, but if your first time playing through a game and you really don't know what you're doing in the first place, maybe just kind of...
Yeah, and I don't want to pass judgment, because you know we've only played for 2 hours, and maybe it will seem a lot more intuitive as we play more of it. But the lack of specificity, goddammit, you've been drinking, I haven't. Specificity about
I gotta buy all these things with bananas.
The just general lack of what you're supposed to do next. Like, I can't tell if the game is just trying to be a wandering type game, or if the game just isn't intuitive enough to let you know what you're supposed to be doing next. And playing more of that will help. The other thing that kind of like muddies the waters a bit for me is that there's a fast transport system. Mm-hmm. But the fast transport system you kind of encounter, and it doesn't really tell you what it is, and then wants you to pay to use it. They're like, hey, here's a thing, pay some money. Like, this money might be useful for something cool. I don't want to just throw money at a thing I don't know what it is. And later on, we had a lot of money and unlocked another fast travel point. It's like, oh, okay, I see what this is now. The easy way to solve it is just make the first one free. Make the first one free so you understand what it is.
What I would love is if, like, the first time you use it, like, you have, like, a teleport pad or something, and then as you're walking over it, the camera slides over, and you see it's just, like, XXX strip club. Right? You're just like, no! Why did I make this decision now?
But yeah, I really like the visual style. It's a really nice-looking game.
What's with your head? I mean,
I don't know.
Like, you've got a...
Yeah, it's weird.
I wasn't reading the story, were you?
Okay. I was trying to, but you were skipping through it.
Well, you've played it. You've already had a save file.
A while ago. I really didn't.
I skipped the initial cutscene. Like, I didn't care.
The story is... Again, so you like, I keep making this reference to Dark Souls. The game's like Dark Souls, where it doesn't hit you with the story. You pretty much have to go and find it.
Hmm.
Like,
that's good. I'm not going to look.
There's, like, these little things that we kept passing, and you can read them. They told you other things, but there's also a little bit of...
A little bit of history.
I don't know. There's just stuff. I don't even know yet.
So something
this
else
game confuses me.
It confuses and enrages me.
Yeah, I haven't figured it out yet.
I'm required to talk about Diablo.
Yeah,
I've been playing a lot of Diablo, of course, as always. And I've really been paying attention to the actual little paragraphs. They give you a little paragraph with every unique item in the game that sort of tells you a little bit of backstory about the stuff. And I don't really have any specific part of the history of the game to describe through the items or anything, but sometimes it really does help build character to be like, oh wow, so it's like the barbarians collected all of these pieces off of the dead and they found them all in this one horrible graveyard. And it's like you built this amazing, beautiful set out of the remnants of armor from other people. You know, it's like, well, it's kind of a cool thought. I never really thought about where did all these sweet, badass pieces of armor come from. And it's like every single one of them has this story. But as someone that's played hundreds of hours of the game, I never really bothered to look. I never bothered to read the item descriptions. And when I did, I was like, okay, they're putting something there for people that really do want to immerse themselves into the story. And John, you hate all art.
I do.
And you certainly hate stories.
Uh-huh.
as a really integral part of telling, of displaying art, you kind of need a story, don't you?
Yeah, I don't think so. But something else that I'm curious to see how this all works out is one of the major things you spend money on, especially early on, is kind of how much information your map will display for you. First of all, and when you enter a new area, you have to find a map maker. Who's this character that...
Big-ass mosquito.
Yeah. A lot of bug-inspired characters in this game. So... You get to him and he'll give you a map for that area, and then
yeah,
there's
like 30 or something.
Yeah, I think the second one was 60, so it probably increases as you go. So then what you have to do is back in I guess like the main town, the only town we've been to so far, your kind of starting town, there's a shop who will sell things that will make your map more useful, like a compass, which will mark your position on the map. Otherwise, you're just kind of trying to induce where you are. Like, you use inductive reasoning to figure out where you are on this map based on the shape of the map and the shape of the room you're in. You can buy things like little tokens that will just like make other things display in your map. It'll display save points, your fast travel points, points where I think they call them hot springs, but they're just places where it looks like you restore like your health and your mana.
So you get to see the tits of all your characters.
Well, they're bugs, so
yeah. I mean, they probably bug tits, I don't know.
Yeah, bug tits.
Yeah.
But there's another thing, like, there's ink you get, which will draw in other parts that the map doesn't actually give you. So it's not a completed map. There's, like, side rooms here and there that aren't actually on the map that we discovered. And then we found out, like, we bought this item, but it's not drawing in the areas after we find them. until you rest at a bench.
Yeah.
And then you add in, and it colors in, like, the areas you've been, so you know where you've been, opposed to where you haven't.
So you don't really track where you've traversed until you get to that save point. And that's what I was getting at when I was talking about... I'm not sure exactly, like, what this game is trying to be just yet, because it does really seem to... so far want to encourage that wandering rather than having specific goals, because otherwise you would think, hey, I bought a map, it should just display all of the available rooms that I can go into in this area. Or I have a map and I have this stuff, it should just trace my progress as I go.
See, sometimes your mind is too clouded with Nintendo gaming logic, because this is not a Nintendo game. This is a port onto Nintendo. It's been out on other systems for a long time. This isn't a Nintendo game.
Right. I'm aware that it wasn't developed by Nintendo, yes.
Yeah.
I don't know what you mean when my mind is clouded. Like,
well, I mean, there's not like a lot of games like this kind of thing on a Nintendo console. Like, can't think of anything like really this... I don't know where I'm going with this. I lost my train of thought.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I lost my train of thought with this.
I mean, again, I'm not trying to pass judgment here. I'm just saying that I'm not sure what the game wants to be yet. So, we'll see. We'll play more of it. Mm-hmm. So, the last game that I want to talk about as a new release is the Mario Plus Rabbids Donkey Kong DLC, which Wes is taking a hard stance against buying for some reason.
Just for now.
Okay.
Maybe eventually, but, you know.
Uh-huh.
If I can get back into the game.
So,
he has an irrational fear of Donkey Kong.
Yeah.
It's true.
He's a big monkey that throws barrels at you. I mean, that's just
he's an ape.
It's yeah.
not you
that's,
racist.
That's cool. That's, I mean,
so I it's
yeah, but didn't a really famous monkey die recently?
Harambe?
No, that was a while ago. And yeah, it sucks about Harambe.
Wow,
I'm still burned up about that.
No, I almost spit Dr. Pepper all over your dog right there.
It was the one that had sign language.
Amy from the movie Come Now?
It was not... God. No, it was not Amy from the movie Congo. At any rate.
Dwayne Johnson.
Wow. No, it was not him either. God damn it.
That's
at any rate. No, there was this like a 50-year-old gorilla that did sign language or something.
Gorillas can be 50?
Holy shit. This one could, yeah, apparently.
Holy shit.
Maybe it was just because it signed language, give me water. You're able to figure out that they can live for a while if you don't leave them dehydrated.
So,
is it a monkey or was it...
Are you looking this up?
I was playing off of your stupidness.
Stupidity? Is that the word you're looking for?
Shut up.
Yeah.
Shut your mouth.
Bonobo, I don't know what kind of monkey that is.
Oh, bonobo, yeah.
40 years.
Monkey.
Common chimpanzee, 50 years.
Oh, no.
Orangutan, 35 to 45 years.
Depending on how much they let it smoke? Like, why is that such a range?
I don't know. It still means so mean. I'm like, sign language monkey who died. Okay. But literally, Google, so smart. The very first word that they could give me is the answer to my question.
I wonder if that's the same Coco they mentioned in Seinfeld.
Probably, yeah. I mean, it lived to be 46 years old. That's a good run if you're a monkey.
Yeah, there's an episode where George at his work, they're giving everybody nicknames.
Yes, they give he wants to be T-Bone,
but the other guy takes it.
Such a good episode.
So they name him Coco after the signing monkey at the zoo.
Yeah, well, because, like, they're ordering food, and everyone's just like, I'll take a salad, I'll take, you know, tuna sandwich or something, and he's like, I'll have a T-bone, and everyone's like, okay, and the next guy's like,
T-bone,
you know,
for lunch?
I'll have a T-bone, too, and they're like, oh, we're calling you T-bone. Like, damn it, the next guy in the line gets the T-bone. Oh, yeah, because they saw him angry, like, he was
yelling at the other guy about taking his T-bone name, and he was, like, his arms were waving around and everything like that, and they saw him through, like, the window and the door. Oh, and it's like, kind of looks like Coco from the zoo.
I'm glad you brought this up. This is like something buried in my subconscious. I'm so glad I for a brief moment get to remember this episode. It really was great.
That was a good one. I've been watching a lot of Seinfeld lately. It's really good.
Oh, it is. It's a wonderful show.
I love that show.
You were saying, John.
Donkey Kong DLC. So
wait, does Donkey Kong know sign language?
No, he can speak.
Yeah.
Can he?
No. So I, actually, if you ever, once you're done with Seinfeld, then go back to the Donkey Kong Country animated series.
Oh my god.
Same exact quality. Really. As Seinfeld, yes. Same exact.
Yeah. Always it was the same showrunner, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, absolutely. And just like Seinfeld, there's always a musical number
yeah.
in the show that always sing a song.
Yeah.
So.
Then after that, you should do the Mario and Luigi show.
Oh, the Super Show?
Yeah.
Actually, Ripley and Mika like the Super Mario Brothers Super Show.
That
so.
Sucks.
I mean, it's fine. Like, I'm not paying attention to it, but.
I feel like both of them went to hell, and they are living in hell. And now they have to be in this live action telling of Super Mario. It's like, they're trapped in this room forever, there's no way out, and it's just constant,
cameras are rolling.
Constant spaghetti gags. Neither of them are even Italian.
Anyway, so this is Donkey Kong DLC. Three characters so far. I think they only have three characters available throughout the whole thing. Donkey Kong, you have a rabid Cranky Kong, which I think is pretty fun, and then a rabid Peach from the main game is in there as well. And it's fun because they definitely all have different roles as opposed to the main game. Because in the main game you have, what was it, like 8 playable characters? And they do a pretty good job with Cranky and DK about mixing up what they're supposed to do, because Cranky is similar to Luigi in some ways, in that he has like those Overwatch skills to where he is like picking off enemies in between like, when it's on his turn. But he uses a shotgun.
God.
So yeah, he does Overwatch shotgun. So you know, of course, like you'd think of
counterintuitive.
Yeah, you'd think so. But it works out pretty well so far, anyway. But you do have to be mindful of where you're positioning your other characters, because if you place Cranky in a position to where it's like an enemy crosses his path, and then like you have one of your own characters in his line of sight, and he's got a shotgun, so he's going to do some splash damage to your own character. DK does some pretty fun traversal things, because there are like really some specific places on the map where like DK can do things like swing on vines in order to get him across to the other side of the map. He's very tanky and highly mobile, which is not something you consider a character combination very often. And then he's got his main weapon, as opposed to like using a gun, he throws a banana, because of course he does. But his banana works like a boomerang. It can actually hit enemies in like a line. So if there are 3 enemies close to each other, if you attack one of them, the other 3 are going to take damage as well, which is pretty cool. So, and he also does some really cool things just from, like, because, you know, like, in the main game, you have your melee attacks. You just kind of, like, select a space where the enemy is already occupying, and then you'll, like, run over there and do some melee damage, and then you can move away. DK, instead of, like, just running into an enemy and doing melee damage, he actually picks the enemy up, and then you can carry them away and toss them into another enemy. Which
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, which is really cool, because especially early on, you have a lot of opportunities just to do some ring out damage. Like, hey, you've thrown the enemy out of bounds, he's going to take extra damage and then come back onto the field and usually die immediately afterwards because he's taken too much damage. So, and you can also you can do the same thing like throwing friendly characters, but I don't think he can throw friendly characters, at least yet. But, you know, just like the main game, they'll have skill trees to fill up.
It's like a grid-based thing, too, right?
Yeah.
It sounds
like,
from what you're describing, a lot like XCOM
games. Yeah, yeah. That's a comparison we drew when the main game came out about a year ago. But, yeah.
And that's a very useful feature, because if you think about it, really, it is just all turf.
Yeah.
It's all turf war, right? Yeah. Just basically, you control. And I imagine that it's probably the sort of thing where it's like, you could use that same skill to pick somebody up and then throw them into a pack of your own guys who can then feast on them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, and you know, most of the maps, like I think I've done 8 battles so far in this DLC, and most of the time it hasn't been just kill all of the enemies. It's, there are these 3 things scattered throughout the map. You gotta just go destroy these.
Ask for
the scientist. Yeah, ask for the scientist.
Recover alien parts.
Well, there was one where
XCOM. XCOM missions.
There was a map where like 3 things were scattered throughout the map. You just had to just go destroy the 3 things and then the map was over. It's to arrive at the end of the map. You have to go through, like, this winding maze and then just get to your destination point. There was one where a couple enemy characters were carrying objects, so you had to kill those two enemy characters and pick up the things that they were carrying. So it's
there's clothing for the homeless.
Yeah. But there's a premise here. Like, I guess at the beginning of the original game, the main game, the premise is there's like a time traveling or like reality hopping washing machine, and it kind of fucks with reality, which is why there are these rabbit characters dressed up as Mario and Luigi in them. Mm-hmm. And in this one, like, it's that, but then cross with like Toe Jam and Earl or Pikmin. They hop to a different reality or different like place and time where Donkey Kong is, and their washing machine breaks up. Like, oh shit, we better get all the washing machine's pieces back together so that we can send Rabbit Peach home. And there you go. There's your premise.
Oh, so is it just the three of them?
So far, all I've gotten is the three characters.
Oh.
And I think I'm getting pretty close to a boss fight, so if there is going to be more characters, this would be the time to show up. Mm-hmm. So, but you know, I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be all that mad either if it was just the three characters, because it's an interesting dynamic, because I broke down the other two, and then Rabbit Peach is just like she was in the main game. She's a healer. Hmm. But yeah, $15 for the DLC. It's pretty good so far. That's all I got.
Yeah.
I don't think I have anything else to say about the DLC. So, you guys want to take a quick break and then come back with some more games?
Sure.
We got some games coming out in July. Oh shit, you know what I didn't do? Hang on. Before we talk about July, I just want to also briefly mention some other new releases came out in June. Pretty busy month. Sushi Striker came out on Switch and DS. The Lost Child came out on Switch. Their Splatoon 2 Octo Expansion DLC came out as well. Looking forward to getting that one. Fortnite came out on Switch. You guys play Fortnite?
Never heard of it. What's Fortnite?
Okay. East 8 Lacrimosa of Dama came out. Mario Tennis Aces.
That's a great name.
Yep. Inside and Limbo came out on Switch.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, both those games were pretty cool. That was a nice surprise.
Oh, you guys probably pick up Inside. I think you'll love it.
Yeah, I got it on my Switch wish list in the eShop.
Yeah.
Not Limbo. I wouldn't love Limbo.
Oh, Limbo's good, but it's just sort of like, it's everything that you're going to like about Limbo, just even better. It's crazy. Hmm.
And then Wolfenstein 2 and Crash Insane Trilogy all came out on Switch. So, really busy month.
I saw there's a Wolfenstein game.
Yeah.
It's kind of an interesting addition to their roster.
Yeah, you know, it's not...
It's just them partnering more with Bethesda, which is
great.
Because Bethesda's awesome.
Yeah, they're okay.
Shut your mouth. I have played so many hours of Fallout at this point. It is absorbing my life. This is not good.
This happens
like,
to you.
This is bad.
Like, this happened. Like, it happened to you with Xenoblade.
This is bad.
You'll get to the final boss of Fallout and then quit. Like, that's just kind of...
We'll start up a new game.
Yep.
It's like, oh, technically, I think I enjoyed this part of the game more
like
than
I
actually beat
it. I just got my second character to level 30. I'm already thinking about starting over and doing a third. Like, it's different.
Do you have to, like, start a completely new save file? Or can you have, like, multiple characters running in one campaign?
No, it's... You start over.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah. That'd be interesting. Like, you just...
Yeah. You just, like, have a barracks all of your character and all of your different characters and...
I don't know why I thought this, but I did get one of the DLCs. I got a couple of the DLCs for Fallout, and it's funny because one of them is called the Automatron DLC, and it's a small one. It's like one quest line, but it adds this new thing where you can... there's, you know, there's some robots in the world and everything like that, and you have this one robot follower that you can use. But this DLC adds a robot station where you can build your own and make modifications to them and everything like that. And so at my little home base thing, you'll go there and there's just like six robots floating around just hanging out. It's really funny.
How many of them are sex bots?
Just the one with the six breasts.
Okay. Fair enough. All right, so now...
You gotta have at least one sex bot. Yeah. Although I did just pick up another one in the actual story mode where it's a big... vending machine of beer. Like, it just cools beer and just, here's a beer.
My interest is peaked.
You picked up a sex bot that's a vending machine?
No, it's just a vending machine. It's beer.
Oh,
okay. Is there one that you've encountered that's like a stoner or something? Or it's like a medical bot, but it's like, it keeps talking about like weed?
It's a dispensary?
That's... kind of like that?
Is it really?
Like, why? This way say something?
Well, my buddy's been playing it too. And this is one of the robots in his town, and it's always like, far out, you know, and it's like, I don't know. I just thought it was kind of a funny addition that they would program.
I don't know.
Which is great that within the world of artificial intelligence, but you just program them to be high.
Yeah.
So we should. It gives us a leg up on it. In case they decide to take over the world.
Just like, make artificial intelligence, but make them all really lazy. So they can take over, but they don't want to.
Yeah.
As long as we're on the subject of drugs.
Oh, what have you been consuming lately?
I was actually listening to this, I can't remember if it was a podcast or a YouTube video, I don't remember. But it was an interview talking to this guy who was talking about the medicinal benefits of hallucinogenic drugs, specifically mushrooms.
Yeah.
And how...
There are genuine medical benefits to consuming mushrooms.
PTSD was the big thing that he was citing, where, you know, you have... people have been like who have had their minds traumatized by these different situations, and what hallucinogenic drugs is basically do a hard reboot on your brain.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah,
it God, I can't remember.
But, how often do you need to do these drugs though?
Well,
it's not like it's a one time thing. Like, brain's all fixed.
He was talking about doing this in a controlled medical environment, not like, here's a bag of mushrooms.
Let's go fuck in the woods.
and that was his point, like using things like hallucinogenics and like acid, LSD to alter the brain chemistry of your mind. So it wasn't like,
well, there were federally funded experiments on drugs on citizens.
Yeah.
Testing these kinds of things. We really didn't know. We just created drugs and we're like, wow, this feels really good. Is there genuine use for this besides getting high?
Hmm.
And it turns out, yeah, there can be genuine, legitimate, you know, medical benefits to taking some of the drugs. I mean, I don't think anyone's saying you need to be railing coke. It's probably not good for anyone's heart, but, you know.
I mean, it's just the sweat off in Florida alone. It's just...
That's true, yeah. Maybe that's what Florida is like. Florida is like... doing cocaine without getting high. It's just your entire body is sweating and your heart is exploding.
That sounds just awful.
Yeah.
Alright, so, games coming out in July. We got some games. 20XX, that's like a Mega Man game. It's a little eShop game. Well, we're not going to do Nintendo descriptions this time because it's almost been an hour already, so we're just going to plow through this. But anyway, it's a Mega Man looking game, 2D side-scrolling sprite art. It looks cool. Little eShop game, nothing super big there. Shining Resonance Refrain is coming to the Switch.
They have a demo out.
They have
you
a demo.
Played a little bit of it, and you were disappointed.
Well, I wouldn't say I was disappointed. I wasn't surprised by anything. Like, I was really excited when Sega announced they were bringing this game to Switch, until I found out what this game was, and I was like, oh... never mind.
Dating simulator?
Mm-hmm. No.
Face touching and blowing?
No, no face. Well, that would be great. At least some more face touching. But it's the Shining series. It's a series of games. And they're usually strategy RPGs, like Final Fantasy Tactics or a Fire Emblem. And it was there are these games that were done by Camelot back in the day, who did the Golden Sun games, and who now does like Mario Tennis, mostly.
Makes sense.
Yeah, it's a shame. But anyway.
What is this one?
This one is an action RPG.
Ooh.
You say that, but... So the
action RPGs, there's
a lot of text. There's a lot of narrative going on, but not in the way like there's voice acting. It's not just all like pure reading text. But what it will do is whenever there's a cut, like instead of like having an animated cutscene, it will just have still images of characters and their dialogue, and then reading their dialogue. And
oh, that's annoying! I hate that.
Yeah, it's very much like early Fire Emblem, except they're trying to like give more production value by having voice dialogue. I don't know. And it's not like, and in Fire Emblem, like even older Fire Emblem, you would still have fully animated cutscenes and things going, like characters talking to each other rather than just portrait of one character who's talking, switch. Portrait of another character who's talking, switch. Portrait of the first character who was talking again. So
How's the actual gameplay, though? Because you don't care about story. And
it is true. I comment on this because I'm just in my way and I couldn't skip it. So, the actual game, I'm pretty sure I was playing through the opening game, so it was very simple. And it seems kind of button-mashy. Yeah. There doesn't seem to be a whole lot of strategy to what you're doing. You do have different, like a strong and a weak attack. You do have things like spells that you can use, and I would imagine you get more of those things, but it didn't seem to matter what attacks you were using. There was a boss fight at the end, and they tried to introduce like something like called a break, where you want to like use specific attacks against an enemy at a certain time. Like, this enemy's weak to this type of attack. Use that when he's doing this, and you'll break him. I was able to do that successfully once, and was trying to pull it off a second time, wasn't able to, and I just beat him by mashing buttons. So, I mean, I wasn't thrilled about this game before, when I found that it wasn't a strategy RPG, and playing through a demo, like, I probably wouldn't even pick this up if it got heavily discounted, like, on Amazon or something. Like,
This game looks ridiculous.
Right? Yeah, and it's unfortunate, because, like, you see the art style of that game. It looks like a game I should like.
It's true. Well, I was looking at this paladin character, and it's like she's covered in metal head to toe, except for her exposed breasts.
Right.
Classic armor design. Right?
I should love this game. I should have this pre-ordered right now.
Jeez.
But no.
What is the point of that?
My boobs need to breathe.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? She is also wearing a very short skirt, so leave her alone.
Well, it's also like there's these pictures of them in like modern school attire.
Yeah.
And then there's ones of them, like, as a band. Like, are they actually, like, minstrels or something?
I have no idea. There was a, like...
Like, you could crudely Photoshop a penis into her mouth.
Right there.
She was working some kind of woodwind instrument.
That essentially is a penis anyways. I mean...
So there was, like, this scene at the end once I beat the demo boss. And it was, I guess, like, things to come. And they were, like, showing all these different characters. And there's like a guy who seemed like his main weapon that he uses a guitar. Like,
that was the dude in the thing.
Yeah, is he red?
Red. And he's got like a guitar axe.
I bet he's got a fiery temper.
Yeah. The whole. They're visually telling you about these characters, and they're telling you that she can suck a mean dick.
I'll get this demo and I'll try it out.
Okay, you're good.
Oh, man. Yeah, so this is like a big series, though? Shining Resonance, huh?
The Shining series, like, and they're different. Shining is always the prefix. There's always different, like, the suffix attached to the end of it. But it's usually
it's like Shining, comma, but not the film. This is a video game that's not inspired at all by Stephen King or Stanley Kubrick.
Right.
Resonance.
Shining Force is the mainline series, and that's a series of strategy RPGs. And there are four, I think, in the main series like that. But Shining Force 3 has three different versions. Anyway, neither here nor there. So, yeah. We'll just have to keep waiting for the big strategy RPG, because this isn't it.
Yeah.
Let's see.
The search continues.
Yeah. Well, Valkyria Chronicles 4 is coming out in September, Fire Emblem next year at some point, so, you know, we'll eventually get these things.
And then we will be touching and blowing faces.
Oh, God, we can only hope.
Yeah.
Come, blood relative, into my bedroom.
Ignore the other blood relative while you're at it. Yes, to the bed.
So, let's see. Captain Toad Treasure Tracker is coming out. Oh, I should mention that Shining Force Resonance Refrain is coming out on the 24th of July, I believe. Captain Toad Treasure Tracker is coming on the 13th.
Great name, say it one more time.
Captain Toad Treasure Tracker.
I like that. I like how you say it, too. For the audience.
So enthusiastic.
Captain Toad Treasure Tracker.
Captain Toad Treasure Tracker.
So Captain Toad is... This is a Wii U game. Came out originally on Wii U, and this...
So he's in the military.
Yes. He is the captain of his own ship.
Oh, okay. So he's just nautical captain.
Right. Right. It's not like a rank in some sort of militant organization. It is... He is in command.
Yeah.
So...
And I get the sense that maybe what they're doing is pirating? If they're in search of treasure...
The thing is, you don't do anything to do with his ship in this particular game. He does not have his Toad Brigade with him.
Is this a farming simulator?
It is. No, this is this game is actually really cool. It's a puzzle game, and what you're doing is you have Captain Toad. You play as Captain Toad, and you're in this diorama type level. And all you're doing is figuring a way to traverse through the level to get these little treasure collectibles. And it ties into Super
Mario. Oh, it's Toad from Mario.
Yeah. You feel like a frog. No.
I thought it was going to be No, not a frog. That'd be a fucking idiot. Toads and frogs aren't the same thing.
Yeah, they're kind of the same. That's the division of turtle and tortoise. Come on.
Crocodile and alligator.
I mean, it's monkeys and apes are the same thing, clearly.
But
toads and frogs. Come on.
So, yeah, you move around these diorama levels, you get little collectibles, and it's funny because it ties into Super Mario Galaxy in some ways, or is it 3D World? Anyway, it doesn't matter, because what you end up doing is you find these little collectibles that you then give to Mario in a different game, which is kind of funny, because, anyway, whatever. So... It's coming to Switch and 3DS. If you didn't buy it on Wii U, I think it's definitely worth a shot on Switch. This is a really fun little game back in the day. Quite a bit of content to it. It was unexpectedly beefy, and I think they might have added a little bit more to it in the Switch and 3DS version as well. They have some Super Mario Odyssey inspired little levels and dioramas.
Yeah, it looks pretty cool.
Yeah. So, let's see. Oh, and the last game I wanted to bring up coming out in July is Octopath Traveler. This was coming out on July 13th.
Man.
Did you play the demo?
I did not. I really want to, though.
You should play that demo.
I keep forgetting to.
Let's put down Fallout for a few minutes.
I need to.
It only takes 3 hours.
Takes 3 hours. Just one day, just play this
game. You were playing this the other day, weren't you?
Yeah.
It looks so good.
It's a really nice-looking game. And I did play through the demo. The demo is last 3 hours. And then you can't play anymore. You can choose to start over, play through as a different character. But I'm just going to let that save file sit and then carry it over to the main game when it comes out in a couple weeks. I started as the thief character, who was very cool. The thief character uses swords as well as daggers and has a limited fire magic. And these sorts of things are important because enemies will have... multiple weaknesses to different things, and what you end up doing is building a party and switching around your party based on the types of enemies that you're running into. And it's actually kind of fun to just go around and figure out what all different weaknesses enemies are going to be exposed to, because exposing weaknesses in battle is one of the key components, because enemies have a shield. Like a sturdiness to them. And if you hit them with their weaknesses of the number of times that they tell you, you'll break down their defenses and they will be able to do a whole lot more damage to them. So having a diverse weapon set to your at your disposal is a big advantage. And they all each have their own different skills as well.
Ridiculous, though.
Which one?
I'm just looking at the cast of these eight people, and it's amazing Valkyrie lady, and just awesome barbarian warrior, and I see the thief, and I see this white mage who looks like a real badass, and then there's a pretty lady with a hat.
Is she the one in red?
No, nah, she's got like a white dress and like a red sash thing.
Yeah. She looks like the belly dancer. I think that's the lady in red you're talking
about.
Yeah,
that's the dancer. Right? Is that the
She's the dancer. The lady in red is the dancer. And she was the character I played. You got to play as her and the warrior dude in the first demo.
Yes. She had a weird ability with her.
What she did is she could be a summoner. But as opposed to like summoning these big monsters, she can summon...
Summon the picnic basket or something?
NPCs. She summoned NPCs that you recruit.
Really?
You just like walk around and you recruit an NPC like, hey, you're going to fight for me in a battle at some point. But you know, that's a skill that in the demo didn't use a whole lot because she uses daggers as well as dark magic. And the dark magic ended up being pretty cool. But like the game really starts to shine when you are actually able to build your party. Because in the demo, there are certain areas that are closed off in the demo, but you pretty much like can go and recruit any of the characters that are available in the main game, as long as you know you can get there fast enough. So I ended up recruiting the cleric girl, who uses staves as well as light magic, as you might guess. And
I'm guessing this is the blonde one here.
Yeah,
that's her white outfit and the sweet staff.
That character, and it's interesting, the game...
She looks like the first person you want to pick up in the game. She looks like a real badass.
Because, for healing magic alone, pretty, pretty useful. So, the game is structured in an interesting way, because what you end up having, you pick your first character, and then, once you're through the little prologue, it will give you the world map, and then show you on the map where... all the other characters are, and it'll mark that like their first chapter is here, their first chapter is here, and it'll show you where your second chapter is, so you can go around, get everybody, do all their first chapter, and then move out from there. Or I suppose it would work out where you can just kind of run through your own before you even bother going to get anybody else. It might be harder that way because you don't have a party to pick from. It's just you're going solo, but it's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out and how often you'll just kind of like run across somebody else's next chapter in their story just incidentally. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious to see how it works out. Like, do you have to have like that character in your party in order to get to that part of their story? Just kind of like automatically pick up. So can you avoid like doing someone's chapter 3 and just pass through an area on the map where it's supposed to be just by not having them in your party? I probably could have gotten a little bit further if I had not decided to watch the introduction for the cleric girl, because what ends up happening is when you get to an area where you can pick up a character, you encounter them just after their introduction. They have a story sequence, there's text you have to read through, and a little bit of just kind of like walking around as that character. But when I encountered the cleric girl, I didn't have a single fight. And I decided to go through the prologue because I thought it was going to be like the thief's prologue, to where I would have to go through a dungeon solo as the one character. So I got through a bunch of text, and then it just kind of, the story sequence ended, and then I got back control of the party with the two of them, and then I had to go through her first dungeon. So I probably could have got clocked a little bit more, like actual game time in the game.
You skip the story that you don't care about.
And it was about 6 or 7 minutes. It wasn't like hugely taxing, but you know, when you only have 3 hours, you're like, okay, I want to get through all this. I want to speed through this so I can actually get to some battles here. But it is cool how you can just kind of skip the story but not miss out on any experience because you have to go through her dungeon and you get to do it with both characters. So
I mean, did they give you a story reason why they're teaming up or anything? Or is it just, nope, there they are, now you got her.
That would have been really hard. That would have been like a really impressive piece of writing because like it would have to be contextual to what character was with you. And there are 7 different options. And then it would have to be like, okay, well, her next chapter, there are, you know, however many combinations of other characters that could be with her at the time.
I mean, yeah, I guess you could just make it based on your whatever character you picked in the beginning, and that's just the stories are going to be getting.
He's going to, like, whoever you pick in the beginning is going to be somehow involved in everyone else's story.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a pretty decent solution. Mm-hmm. They should call you.
They should, right? And, like, we established earlier, I'm a wonderful salesman.
Yeah.
And now I'm a great storyteller. Come on. Video games are easy. Come on.
Easy to make. Anyone can do it.
This is Square Enix, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
They're fucking terrible storytellers in the first place. So, and they, yeah, totally. You should be like...
Don't you say anything bad about Spirits Within. They'll come after you.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, actually, I think that's the one bright spot of the whole Square Enix deal. Yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Oh, I mean, because they got Steve Buscemi some voice acting work.
Huh.
You know?
Good for them. I haven't seen Spirits Within in so long.
It's... Yeah, I am...
That's the movie, right?
Yeah.
I think, yes, it's terrible. But...
I think the movie's fine. It's entertaining enough.
It's pretty bad.
Steve Buscemi was in Spirits Within?
Yeah, he is the voice actor of one of the dudes that eats it. Which is like everyone dies, but
pretty much everybody dies.
I don't remember anything about that movie.
I assure you he's in it.
Okay, I believe you. I don't think you would lie.
No, you're looking at me. You're giving me an incredulous look that says, you fucking
lie. Well, you know, what's going through my head right now is, was he also in Titan AE? And I don't think so.
That movie I like.
Yeah, well, let's let this bad boy up.
Yeah, Titan AE.
I thought the cast was actually pretty impressive.
In Titan AE or Spirits Within?
Probably both, actually.
What the hell is that?
Yeah, it's probably...
Just randomly...
Well, Titan AE was Matt Damon and Bill Pullman.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, the cast was... Oh, yeah, okay. So, Alec Baldwin, James Woods, Donald Sutherland, Bing Rames, Steve Buscemi. That's pretty...
Really?
Pretty good cast.
Yeah.
I remember that was a big thing about it. Like,
this weird...
They spent $137 million on this movie.
What?
And again, like that was like 20 years ago. Like that was a huge budget.
God.
Oh yeah. And this was like just after Sakaguchi got like bumped up, promoted, and he wasn't a main driving force behind the actual Final Fantasy games. Yeah. And I think this might have been his first. And this is all anecdotal. It might have been his first big project after doing all these Final Fantasy games. And it did not go well. Yeah. It didn't go well at all.
I think the movie was fine.
Yeah, I mean...
Square Enix feels differently.
Well, I mean, they spent $137 million and made, like, $85 million. They're saying here, the film has been called a box office bomb and is blamed for the demise of Square Pictures. So that's probably why you're not seeing a lot of Final Fantasy movies anymore. Is because...
I do see, the Final Fantasy VII tie-ins is what
the Advent Children one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was good.
I think they did another one.
Well, I like that one. Did they?
I don't know, maybe.
I want to see a Final Fantasy IX movie.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
You want your Titan AE cast?
Sure.
Yes.
Matt Damon.
Yes.
Bill Pullman.
Uh-huh.
John Leguizamo. Nathan Lane. Nice. Jeanine Garofalo. Drew Barrymore.
Drew Barrymore. That was the female lead.
I did not know that this had those kind of people.
Yeah.
That's really surprising.
What do you mean by those kind of people?
No, just big actors.
Okay.
What do you mean? Bing Rames? What's wrong with Bing Rames?
I love Bing Rames.
I do too.
I was listening to a podcast today. I think it was a baseball podcast, and somebody referenced John Rhys-Davies. Like, I love John Rhys-Davies.
That's nice.
Drew Barrymore is also in recently. Is that that Netflix series Santa Clarita Diet? She's a zombie.
Oh, no way.
And it's actually like it's actually funny. You know, it reminds me of the show Weeds, where it's kind of like a send-up of that kind of middle-class suburban life. Like
the kind of dull fakeness of it all.
Yeah.
A very hollow feeling about
it is very, very, like, offensively polite, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, the premise is, like, she becomes a zombie. Doesn't really matter how. And of course, she does things that zombies want to do, like eat people. But everyone is very, very like phony nice to each other.
So I don't want to act like I was like deep in this scene before it. Like I was like hipster cool about it. But like, don't you feel like zombies have sort of been co-opted a bit? Like I remember growing up, and zombies were fucking terrifying things.
Yeah,
and they scarred me from watching movies like Dawn of the Dead and Return of the Living Dead.
And then you got things like iZombie.
And the Santa Clarita Diet.
Fucking kid show. What is it?
Plants vs. Zombies.
It's literally called Zombies. And it's like a world where zombies like coincide with normal people. And it's like a fucking high school.
You know, it's like, remember when Nosferatu was just like a terrifying demon monster
that was like going to just like suck the life essence out of you, and now they're just like they're pretty people.
Yeah.
Now they're really pretty.
And I think Hotel Transylvania, where Dracula is now.
I know, you're right. Oh, the trailer kind of sold me a little. I dare say I want to see this movie.
I feel like
I'm defeating my own point, but go ahead.
I think that there are things like at a certain point, like they like we saw scary zombies so many times that they stopped being frightening at all. And so like the next thing was okay. Well, what do we like? Let's make them funny. And you know, it starts with like genre pieces, Shaun of the Dead, that kind
of
thing.
Return of the Living Dead, even though it was made in the early 80s and it's gruesome and dirty and a nasty film, but it's kind of comedic. And really, when you see it and you're like, when you've seen enough horror, you go back to a film like that and you're like, this is pretty funny. This is pretty funny and not so, horrible, I guess. I don't know, I love it. It's one of my favorite zombie movies, and it always has been one of my favorite zombie movies, but it's just weird watching, like, going from seeing, you know, these hard-boiled, terribly depressing stories, like Night of the Living Dead, or Dawn of the Dead, or actually kind of a little bit like Walking Dead. I think Walking Dead is actually still kind of true to the idea that zombies are disgusting and horrifying.
Mm.
But they Return of the Living Dead, in particular, has some zeal, has some fun with the gruesomeness of it.
The Walking Dead also, and you know, it's one of the things that everyone brings up about The Walking Dead. It's like you have the zombies, but zombies are like the background noise. Yeah. Whereas like the entire like, point of the show is like, oh, the human beings are also just as gruesome and horrible, and in some cases even more so than these monsters. And that goes back to like the Romero version of zombies, where it's social commentary.
Yeah, there's a reason it's set in the mall.
Yeah, exactly. So it does stay true to like the zombie genre and that method as well. It's just always bizarre to me, like zombie movies. In zombie movies, no one has seen a zombie movie. Like
that's true.
All the explanation you need, zombie apocalypse. Okay, everyone knows what's happening.
Was it DayZ or the one of the zombie books? Like. They don't actually address them as
World War Z.
Yeah, nobody. Even though it's all supposed to be essentially like war, they read like war letters. You're reading the accounts of the people that lived through all these horrible experiences. But no one ever calls them a zombie. They always call them something else. So like, I forget what they use a generic word for whatever they are, but it's never zombies, which I thought was kind of a clever touch. But it's audiobook, so if you get the audiobook, it's fucking wonderful. Because all of these famous people do different chapters in it. So, you know, sometimes you're reading it from the perspective of a first responder, or maybe it's a mercenary that's supposed to go kill them, or it's some, you know, it's a mom who's got her kids, or something like that. It's never the same character's perspective. Sometimes it's scientists and doctors who are examining it for the first time, and it's always unique. It's always interesting. That's what makes it so interesting. It's like, they don't know anyone else's story, and no one else knows their story.
Hmm.
So everyone's giving you their hot take on what the hell is happening. So, very cool.
Yeah.
Right, you forget John doesn't care about stories.
Or books.
When someone just reads you a story, though, and you just can simply passively just lean back and enjoy, I think you might enjoy it.
Is it Patrick Stewart?
I
would listen to him talk.
And Mark Hamill. It does one of the mercenary ones.
I got a great book for you. Mm-hmm. Will Wheaton does this one called Ready Player One.
Absolutely.
You're going to love it.
No.
You're going to love it. I mean, you're like Wesley Crusher in Star Trek? Come on.
Yeah.
This is...
I will not.
He will say chapter one and your dick will become a divine rod towards the second. You will be so happy.
I refuse. I'm not participating.
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
Come on, they you know, bump this like the Wonder Twins. Come on, man.
No. No.
Was it you that told me about the podcast?
Oh, yeah.
Where it's like, they read fanfic, and then it's like, they have to guess which one is the real one.
Oh, yeah.
That's so awesome. That's so funny.
They continue on that podcast, and they start reading his next book, Armada, and they read excerpts of the book. And they play audio of Will Wheaton reading excerpts of that, of Armada. And
don't tell me they're making fun of Will Wheaton.
Oh my god, it's worse. No, they don't make fun of Will Wheaton, but they're like, okay. This is what Will Wheaton had to do. There's like they timed it out. 5 minutes and 30 seconds of audio of Will Wheaton just listing things and the year they happened. This movie came out this year. This movie came out this year.
It's actually difficult. That's the thing. His writing is actually sometimes very difficult to consume in audio format. Like, when he's literally reading an AIM chat dialogue, where he has to say the handles of, what was it, it's Percival and...
Yeah.
What's her name?
Artemis.
Where he's like, Percival, hi. Artemis, hi. It's like, he literally has to do it this way. That's how the words are on the paper. He has to convey the words to you.
Hmm.
As a narrator of an audiobook, those passages are fucking tough to sit through. Where I just wish I was reading a book.
Nauseating.
Yeah, I mean, in this instance, I wish I just had a book and I could just read the words. But yeah, probably when he's just giving you this giant... It's like if you know, you read Genesis, and then you read Exodus, and then you read Leviticus, and it's like all of this history is coming out about the Christian faith, and it's like, numbers... Let's read about some lineage. Let's just read about some people that knew each other biblically. So, that sucks. That is hard to read. So I can understand him wanting to give you that, just to be like, here's a shotgun blast of shit I know.
Hmm. But
these are the things that I know.
But it is really fun when they have their listeners of the show like write in with this fan fiction that they've concocted. And every time like they reveal which one is from a section of the book they haven't read yet and which one is fan fiction, they're both of the podcast hosts are just so disgusted with like how can some of this schlock be real.
Oh shit. So speaking of Riff Tracks related stuff, I just went to the most recent Riff Tracks, which was great, but they're going to be doing a live one here in Orlando.
Oh, get out of here.
And I'm going. It's going to be good.
When is it?
October, late October.
What are they doing?
It's a horror, some kind of shitty horror film.
Okay.
I probably should have mentioned this earlier. I think it's already sold out.
Hmm.
But it's going to be really good. I think it's at Hard Rock.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that'll be fun.
So I've never done, I've never seen them live. I mean, I've gone to dozens of their in-theater showings, and I've watched dozens more just from downloading them, but... Hmm. It would be cool to actually sit there and watch them do it. Oh, and it's not Riff Tracks, it's Mystery Science Theater. So,
okay,
the new crew and the old crew.
Oh, nice. That's cool.
We should do a live show.
Mm-hmm. Who's gonna go to our, who's gonna go to our live show? What are we gonna?
We're big enough.
Just watch. We're gonna watch Rain of Fire. I'm just gonna talk about how awesome it is.
It would be hilarious and maybe a little weird for everybody that's not us if we went to the shop up the street from here. There's a shop up the street that does like nerdy shit, and they do D&D miniatures.
Oh, Cool Stuff Inc.
And they've just got that's what it is. And they've just got just an entire room full of cardboard, or not cardboard, folding tables.
Tabletop shit.
Yeah,
yeah.
So we can bring a microphone there and a computer and just record. And
nobody's gonna stop us.
It's like, are you guys gonna buy anything?
Just random people. Dude, can you shut up? We're trying to play.
Our game of Parcheesi is being ruined.
We're going to teach you nerds how to play Twister.
that's a great idea. Wouldn't it be awesome to go to like fucking Magic the Gathering night and then just bust out the Twister? Like, all right, everybody. All right, fuckers, get in a row.
So, Octopath Traveler. That's a video game. This wasn't even an After Dark.
How did we get here? I'm sorry.
I don't remember.
So hard.
Zombies. We got here by zombies somehow.
Oh yeah. Sorry.
My God. So, I'm looking forward to playing through the rest of the game. Like, I am probably going to be a huge completionist and try to play through like complete everyone's quest. There are like side missions and. I don't know if, like, the side quests you pick up just from NPCs are completable in the demo. I don't know. They seem to be, like, these very, like, long, drawn-out side quests. Maybe I just totally missed, like, the thing they're talking about. There's, like, this one lady, like, oh, I'm looking for this. I can't find it. So, like, okay.
Can you retrace her steps?
No. She just expected me to do it for her.
Like, best of luck to you.
I also didn't see maybe it was just something I wasn't looking for. I didn't see like a log to keep track of your side quests, which is going to destroy any of my motivation to actually try to find like whatever the fuck she lost, if I don't have it written down. And maybe that's for the best, because if I had like a side quest checklist, I would feel compelled to fill it out.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm really looking forward to this one. Looking forward to like building a party of four characters. It's going to be really fun to see how the battles play out with four characters in your party.
I kind of like the way that it transitions between this hyper detailed artwork that you see that I feel like it's going to accompany a lot of the character pop-ups, but then also this really interesting real world that your character, the overworld, I guess you would call it, where everything's kind of cropped in with darkness and you're kind of seeing with a limited scope, and it just looks good. And then you get into the fights themselves, and then it becomes, your characters are still kind of sprite based, but the monsters seem like they are very, very high
detail. Yeah, especially the bosses. There are some very large boss fights.
Yeah, like the main the main boss is huge.
Yeah,
for some reason,
like disproportionately big.
Which is really weird. Like I was watching you do the thief, and it's just some like the butler.
Yeah, you have to fight the butler.
You gotta fight the butler, and he's fucking gigantic. All of a sudden, you're like, "What is this?"
And it makes
he looks like he'd make more of a mess in the house than actually cleaning.
At that point, they're just showing off. Like, look at these awesome sprites we can make. You want to do it for the main characters? No, just the enemies.
It's a bit more work than we want.
But yeah, it looks really cool. So I think that's going to bring this one to a close.
Well, we also forgot the other thing that came out this month.
Oh yeah, go for it.
So they did re-release the Nintendo Classic.
They sure did.
Nice. And of course I picked this guy up.
Uh-huh, good.
And speaking of RPGs, I'm very excited to be playing Final Fantasy again.
Oh, the original?
Yeah, because that's on there.
Have you started it?
Not yet. I just bought this today. I haven't even gotten out of the box.
Okay, it is... It has aged. It has really aged.
Yeah.
I think that, and hopefully they've cleaned it up, because there are some things about the original NES ROM of Final Fantasy that was flat out broken. Like spells that were not effective. I think like the best way to actually play through Final Fantasy 1 is that GBA cart, Dawn of Souls, which has Final Fantasy 1 and 2, or like the Final Fantasy Origins collection on PS1 was pretty decent as well. But it is a really interesting piece of history to play through, the original NES version of Final Fantasy. The way that magic works is a lot different from other Final Fantasies, because rather than having MP, you have, like, these are your level 1 spells, and it's cure and, you know, poison cure, you know, whatever it is, and you can use these 9 times. And then here are your level 2 spells, and it's this and this, and you can use them 5 times.
And then what do you gotta do, like, go and rebuy them?
It's essentially still MP. Well, you have to rest at an inn. And
refills. Okay.
And then as you level up, you can use them more. So, you know, you start out, like, using level 1, like, 4 times. So then as you level up, you can use them more often.
Okay.
But yeah, it's an interesting game to go back to, because then you do have things where you can actually like build your party. You can choose the type of party members that you want to play through the game with. I would typically go warrior, thief, black mage, white mage, but I don't know if a black mage is necessary or worth it. It'd be interesting to see what other people on the internet would think about the ideal party. Maybe a thief wouldn't be part of an ideal party.
I don't even know what the options are, like what they have for it.
Black mage, white mage, warrior, thief, monk, red mage. Okay. I think are the 6.
And then they do another thing later on. Is that the thing where they like mix classes later on or something?
No, it didn't have a job system, but what they do when you get to a certain point in the game is your classes upgrade. So like a warrior becomes a paladin, a white mage becomes like a white sage.
Okay.
And a thief becomes a ninja.
Sounds very tactics.
Yeah. It's
probably in some ways related.
Yep.
There's just so many great games on this thing, and I'm super excited for it.
This roster looks fucking wonderful.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah.
Well, what else is on the NES Classic?
Balloon Fight.
Oh, yes, Balloon Fight. Glue Glue Land is on there as well.
Yeah, the Castlevania, Donkey Kong, Double Dragon, Dr. Mario, Excitebike, Galaga. I have, like, every single one of these games, if not ingrained in me as a fan of video games, is just instantly recognizable.
They have Ice Hockey.
Ice Climber.
Mm.
Which one of them, though? There's no Ice Climbers.
Mm.
Gradius, Kirby, Mario,
Ghost, you can tell them rules.
Alphabetical. Mega Man 2, Metroid, Ninja Gaiden, Pac-Man, Super Contra, Super C.
Yeah.
Super Mario Bros. 1, 2, 3.
Not the original Contra, Super C? Interesting.
Yep. Super Contra.
Okay.
Bubble Ball,
Legend of Zelda 1 and 2.
Yeah.
Castlevania 2.
I think it was Castlevania 1, 2, and 3 on there? Or is that all three of them?
Castlevania 2.
No, just 1, 2.
So there's like Super Famicom. So if you were in Japan, you'd get a different set of games.
Yes.
So
yes.
They're getting...
yeah, so the Famicom...
Final Fantasy 3.
Yeah.
Mario Open Golf.
I think they also have like a Dragon, like the original Dragon Warrior on there as well. On the Famicom one.
Yeah, a lot of these are in Japanese, so...
Mm.
Punch Out, Kid Icarus, Donkey Kong Jr. Atlantis No Nazo?
Tecmo Bowl. Yeah. Bo Jackson Touchdown.
Yep. Tecmo Bowl is probably one of those ones that are on the North American and European version.
He was going through the.
Yeah, I was just reading on there.
Mm-hmm. But this is fucking sweet, man. This is a really good roster. And again, we're talking about earlier, this is, I think, a way better way to consume this than to try to go track down an old school.
Yeah.
Legit Nintendo, and then try to get into that collecting thing of these cartridges. It's got to be fucking awful.
Some of these cartridges probably aren't that expensive, but you're always going to have to be concerned. Okay, does the hardware work? Do my cartridges work? Do I have to keep them clean? There's a lot more maintenance that we'll also go into. And certainly, like you're paying like $60 for an NES Classic Edition, it will certainly cost you more than $60 to go and track down all these. Yeah. Cartridges and hardware, even if you're only paying a few bucks per cartridge.
Oh, and so, well, and I don't know how you feel about this. So Cybertron, game stores here in Orlando called Cybertron. I've noticed they've gotten into the habit of having a special area, so you're not confused, but a special area for all.
Is it behind a Kern, and you have to be 18 to go beyond there?
Yeah, I mean, there's condoms and dildos, yes. But with the condoms and dildos... are specifically labeled repros, meaning reproductions.
Oh, yeah.
And what would you pay for a reproduction of a game? What's your default? Like, if you just saw it in a store...
$0.
I know this is a fake... But their Ogre Battle March of the Black Queen that is legit copy in its box is $150. Mm. They have another one that's a repro.
I mean, I would have a hard time paying. Like a Super Nintendo cartridge looking.
Yeah, like you plug it into your thing and it would be essentially the same thing.
I might go as high as like 10 or 15.
10 or 15?
Personally.
Okay. They've gotten into the habit of doing this.
Okay.
I don't know if this is good.
I don't know if, God, who did?
I think they're gonna poison the well and sully the water if they try to put that shit out there too much. Because people are going to try and pass off these reproductions as being legit shit. And they're also charging, I think, $25 a piece. And I'm like, oh my God, no. I understand that, it's technically 8 times cheaper than, your copy of, like, Earthbound or whatever, but...
Yeah, but
there's zero value in this if I try to legitimately sell it.
Sure, I mean, the value is you get to play, like, this stuff on original hardware, which is cool, but it doesn't... Just, like, my knee-jerk hot take reaction to this, because I didn't know this was actually a thing... That people would do. It seems like they're just taking somebody else's work and then reselling it to you. Like it'd be as if somebody copied the Sistine Chapel and then tried to sell you a ceiling as if it was their like, hey, here's a copy of it. Like, don't you want to buy it?
It's a reproduction of the Sistine Chapel.
Yeah.
Look at it. I mean, technically it's not the right, markings or color, but hey, it's there.
Right. I don't know. Just it feels like you're standing on someone else's.
It's bootlegs essentially, right?
Yeah.
And it's I don't know. It's one thing for bootlegs to exist out there. I don't know if it's something that a gaming store should be selling. And again, I feel like I'm shitting on these people. They're awesome. They're all right. But I just don't know why they're doing this. I mean, I know why they're doing it. They want to make money. But
I wonder what they have to go through, like, because they'd have to get a cartridge. Are they, like, taking other cartridges and wiping them, maybe?
It's mostly Madden's.
Oh, I mean, they sell games there for 99 cents. They're not fucking... They can easily get the parts and pieces. It's really just a matter of getting the new stickers and putting them on the things. But they're probably people that just press them. That just make... All they are is essentially that little panel and then two things. Like, I was playing that Japanese baseball game. Because I just unscrewed the back of another one and then put it on there and then it fit. Because that's the only thing that was making them not fit in this N64s from Japan versus America is that the clips, like the actual frames, will not fit into the slot.
Yeah.
Without unless you swap.
That was region locking in 1995.
Yeah, that's all they were doing, right? So, you know, I'm sure you can just buy them pretty cheap.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that.
You want to play the game and you want to play it on the old school hardware, but it doesn't feel right to do it with the.
It would be really, really nice if there was a way that. Who did Ogre Battle? Was it Squaresoft?
Enix, yeah, maybe? It was before the merger, I think, if I remember correctly. But yeah, it should be Square.
It'd be really nice if there was like a legitimate way I could give Square, you know, $10-$15 to play this game. Yeah. But
as the consumer, you're kind of shafted.
Yeah.
It's difficult to get it in the way that you want it. Well, whatever.
But yeah. Next up is the Pokemon show.
What are we doing?
We got stuff to talk about.
There's like a lot of Pokemon Go stuff that happened.
Oh, that's true. Lots of
stuff. A lot of Pokemon Go stuff.
Pokemon Let's Go Pikachu, Let's Go Eevee. We learned some new stuff. We'll break down.
We can discuss that some more.
Yeah, that'll be good. We haven't done a game in a while. Should we do a game?
I would be about that.
Yeah.
Which game?
It doesn't matter to me. Like I can make it unless you really feel strongly about wanting to do a quiz game.
Well, I suck at the games.
That's okay. There's no prize.
I suck at making these games. Well, the prize for me is I always seem to piss you off.
It's a pretty good one.
John usually gets pretty pissed when he's winning the entire time, and then I come up with some bullshit question for him, and he's like, fuck.
You fucked it off.
Yeah.
If
you want to put together a game, we can play it.
Yeah, I'll make a quiz game.
Yeah, I'm okay with losing again.
Probably,
yeah. It's been a while, so, you know.
B player two.
This might have been the episode we were listening to. I made a quiz game for us to play. This is hilarious that this happened this way. But I came up with this really complex question I was going to ask the both of you, where it was like, there's like fucking 12 bug flying types. And
uh-huh.
You go back and forth, and I set up all these rules, and I was like, okay, you have to go back and forth, name them, and then you name one, and you immediately name one that's not one. And it's just like, oh, well, fuck. this is going to be a long question. It's just like, no, okay, we're done.
That's fun. I wonder who you named.
I remember it was Beedrill. Well, because you confuse him probably a little bit, because you're like, Butterfree. And he's like, Beedrill. It's like, oh, but that's
bug poison. Yep. Yeah,
bug fly.
So yeah, that'll be fun. Yeah, and then we'll just start off. But we will do a retro show in July. We'll have some games to talk about there. But yeah. Anyway, till next time, everybody.
So long.
Later.